Are you tired of staring at a sea of disengaged faces during your lessons? Want to turn those classroom yawns into wide-eyed engagement? Stick around because today on The Classroom Next Door, I'm revealing 5 powerhouse strategies that will transform your K-5 classroom into an oasis of active learning. Oh, and one of them is a game changer that you're not going to want to miss. Let's get your students excited about learning inside your already daily routines. Let's go. Hey there, educational rock stars. Welcome back to another episode of The Classroom Next Door. My mission is simple: to equip you with actionable tips, transformative stories, effective classroom systems, and expert insights for your K-5 classroom. I'm Farah, your host, also known as the Center Fairy, your go-to guide for all things simplifying your teacher life. Each episode dives deep into key facets of the teaching experience, from lesson planning and classroom management to student engagement and professional growth. If you're new here, I'm so glad that you found us on your preferred podcast platform. We are so happy to have you as part of our amazing educational rockstar community. So whether you're sipping coffee at home, out on a walk, binge listening while you're lesson planning, or on a daily commute to school, crank up that volume and get ready for a dose of inspiration and empowerment. Let's dive in. Educational rock stars. I feel like I have been talking about engagement for ages. It might have something to do with the fact that I've been recording 4 episodes in a row all about engagement. It's a series and we're on episode 4. And I hope that you have enjoyed the last 3 episodes over the last 3 weeks, because I know some of the information might be a little dry at times, but it's really important information for you to know so that you can effectively make sure that you are doing things that are really engaging and effective for your classroom. And it's not just fluff engagement, right? And not that fluff engagement, because that can elicit some emotional engagement. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can go back and listen to, I believe it's episode 2 of season 5, just a few weeks back, where I talked about the emotional engagement. And emotional engagement's great, but we also want to make sure that we're hitting those other levels of engagement and the domains of engagement, the cognitive engagement, the behavioral engagement as well. So again, I've been talking about engagement. I'm almost engaged out, but I've got one more episode for you because I want to share some things that you can do even in those most mundane daily routines that you've got going on in your classroom that can help increase engagement. They're going to sound familiar because I may have talked about them on a different level in another episode, one of the last 3 episodes, but let's go ahead and dive in. The first tip that I want to share with you is incorporating movement into learning. Now, you might be thinking, well, Farah, you talked about total physical response in several of the episodes, but I'm not just talking about total physical response, because incorporating movement into learning is going to help children who are naturally active. And that's all children. Children are naturally active, and movement can be a great stimulant for engagement. So considering short brain breaks where students can stand up and stretch, or even better, use movement as part of the learning process, that would be total physical response. For example, you could have your students walk around the room to collect data for a math problem, or act out a scene from the story, and it's going to significantly enhance engagement as well as the retention. So I am going to give you a few examples of this, okay? So one of my favorites is doing Simon Says, but with educational tasks like Simon Says, point to a rectangle, or Simon Says, spell cat, right? And they're all doing it as a class. It can get fun. It's also going to allow them to get their wiggles out, especially for our younger learners, and maybe even their blurts out, right? So they're not blurting constantly when they're not supposed to. Another one is to incorporate dance moves into a counting lesson. For example, as students count, they can do different dance moves for different numbers. And then you can even utilize outdoor spaces, taking a nature walk and asking students to identify different types of leaves or rocks and tying that into your science curriculum. So anything that can get students up and moving, because students are naturally active, right? Especially if you've got a bunch of little wiggle worms. I love doing these types of things in kinder, first grade, and even second grade. But listen, I had some wiggle worms in fifth grade too. So it works regardless of grade level. Now, tip number 2 is daily check-ins. Now, daily check-ins are going to help you begin the day with a simple question that each student answers during your attendance. For example, it could be something like, what's your favorite book? Or name one thing you're grateful for today. Or, you know, just really anything. This routine sets a positive tone for the day, and it also lets your students know that their opinions are valued. And I think a lot of times when students don't participate in class, oftentimes it's a reflection of whether or not their opinions with regard to that power dynamic of adult to child, are their opinions validated? And sometimes they just need to know that they are, and they have a voice where they can actually share. Here's a few examples of this. Using a mood meter where students can express how they're feeling through colors or emojis as they walk into the classroom. You heard me talk about my check-in board, my area in my classroom where it was just on the whiteboard, they would check in with an emoji. Using a question of the day on the board where students can write their answers on a sticky note and then place them into a designated area. And this can even be anonymous. It's really great if you do these anonymously occasionally so that students can feel comfortable sharing. The thing about this is, especially if you start doing these later on in the school year, oftentimes as teachers, we recognize handwriting. If a student shares something anonymously and you read it, it might give you some insight into maybe something that's going on with that student that they haven't shared with you yet. And I wouldn't recommend just naturally going up to them and going, I see you wrote this down, especially if it's supposed to be anonymous. But it can give you that red flag moment, or it's like, heads up, you need to know this. And you can be on the lookout and you can start trying to provide opportunity for that student to naturally disclose this to you. Another example is create a classroom Twitter wall, right? Now, we all know it's not called Twitter anymore. I don't know what that's all about. Was never huge on Twitter, you know, getting involved in Twitter anyway. But this would definitely be offline, of course. But they can tweet their thoughts or something that they've learned throughout the day. So this would be really cool to put like outside your classroom. And then as an exit ticket, have your students write on a sticky note their tweet of what they learned, their favorite fact they learned or their favorite thing they learned that day in class. And then they put them outside and then everybody's able to see. Other teachers are able to see, and they're able to be like, hey, I saw down in Miss Johnson's class that your favorite thing you learned about today was that, you know, a pentagon had five sides. Little things like that can go a long way with helping teachers really connect with them students. Now, tip number three, it brings up something that I'm genuinely proud of. I use them in my own classroom. They are being used by thousands of teachers in grades first through third grade. And that is our spiral review units. Now, listen, we all have that moment of the day in the morning where students are starting to come in the classroom and they're putting away their backpack. It's kind of, you've got to take lunch. You've got to figure out who's eating in the cafeteria. And we've all got these systems, right? If you're in lower elementary, maybe you had the clips where they had to move their clip to a certain place. In upper elementary, maybe they just had to move their name to a certain place or whatever. Or maybe you just did it orally and you just did it, you know, verbally where you just asked them. Right? Whatever your system was, there are things that housekeeping things that have to happen at the beginning of the day, right? There was always that 10 to 15 minutes at the beginning of class where I needed something for my students to do that was meaningful, but it would also kind of jumpstart their brain into learning mode. Because if they've just come off the bus or they just come out of the cafeteria where they've been chatting with their friends, they're being loud, they're in social mode, right? They're in social engagement mode. They're not in cognitive engagement mode. So I want to just kind of switch that over. And our spiral review units are perfect for that. Now, our daily spiral review units are designed explicitly for first, second, and third grade. Kindergarten, fourth, and fifth, we hear you. We know you want them. They're on our list, I promise. These units do provide 20 days of spiral review for both math and literacy each month. There are 10 units that cover a full 40-week school year. The idea is to continually reinforce and review previous skills alongside new ones, which keeps your students engaged and actively participating in their learning journey. And guess what? Teachers who have used these units report significantly higher engagement and assessment scores because their students are continuously practicing these skills. Now, you don't have to use these only in the morning as morning work. That's just one example to get your students' brains active as soon as they step into the classroom. But you could also incorporate them into your small group rotations, even adding them as a center if you wanted to. You could also use them as a closing activity, reinforcing what students have learned throughout the day before they go home. And you could even use them as homework. My favorite way to use them was to actually have each unit, I would print out the entire unit. I actually would spiral bound them because the school that I was at that year had a spiraler that teachers had access to. And so I would create 25 copies. They would get spiral bound. And at the beginning of the month, they would all get their new workbook. And kids loved it because they got their workbook and they knew it was a fresh workbook that they just literally worked through if they were fast finishers or when they first came in the classroom. They knew that that's what they were supposed to be doing was their spiral review. Again, early finishers, just any number of things that they could work through that workbook. And it just had to be completed by the end of the month. I very rarely had a student that actually finished the entire book, the entire 20 pages before the end of the month. Usually they were having to get caught up at the end of the month, but it's spiral review, right? And you're not necessarily grading it. You can flip through it. You can check it. It's definitely something for you to be able to put back in a portfolio, like a beginning of the year one, middle of the year one, and ending of the year one, to be able to show their progress and things. But yeah, that was my favorite way to use them. Now, tip number four is interactive digital tools. So utilizing interactive digital tools, it's kind of a no-brainer to me because today's kids, they're digital natives, right? They will never know a world without technology. And so incorporating that technology can greatly boost their engagement. And I get it, especially after COVID. It's like there are too many screens, too much screen time. But I want you to think about this. There used to be a time when the internet was new. Now I'm Generation X, and there was a time when I remember because the internet became a thing my senior year in high school. I know I'm that old. I remember a world without the internet. And I remember when we had a senior class project and we had to create these newspapers and they were individual and we basically had to create a newspaper for the century. And we were having to go back through the decades and create issues of the newspaper. It was a project that I remember because I had so much fun doing it. And we created these and we got to use the internet to research and print things out and so forth. And Google wasn't a thing. I don't even remember what we were using to search and search for things, but it was very interesting. But we were having to still go to the library to look up things in the encyclopedias too. And I remember vividly my history professor this was a project that he had assigned. I remember vividly him telling us that we could only use the internet for, and I don't even think he called it the internet, but anyway, we're going to call it the internet. We could only use the internet for one of our sources per decade. We still needed to be able to rely on encyclopedias because the internet might not always be around. And I think thinking back on it, it's absolutely, I have to laugh about it because who owns encyclopedias anymore? I mean, I still love encyclopedias. I still know somebody who owns encyclopedias, but people don't use them. Right? So we need to think about the fact that our students, what is life going to look like for our kindergartners when they go into the real world, right? So yes, I get that there is a time and a place for screen time. And I think what's most important is that we make sure that when we are using technology in our lessons, that we are using it effectively. And it's not just another game. Or not necessarily replacing pencil and paper, but we're actually using it to enhance the learning. Okay, that's my soapbox. So for the haters that want to come after me about, oh my gosh, after they have too much technology or too much screen time, I get it. And I do think there's a balance. But I think we need to remember, they didn't think encyclopedias were ever going to go anywhere either. And hello. So some different ways that you might think about using tools like Kahoot for quick quizzes, apps like ClassDojo. I loved ClassDojo for real-time feedback for students. Seesaw is another one. In fact, our math and literacy centers, we have even created Seesaw versions of them so they can do the activities digitally. Those are especially helpful when maybe you didn't have time to actually like print out and create the center games. You could use Flipgrid to let students record short video responses to a lesson, which can then be shared and discussed. You can use Google Earth during geography lessons. I think this is important. I think it's very important that they need to know how to actually use Google Earth and not just the automated directions to get somewhere. I do think that's important because what happens if they can pull up Google Earth or they can pull up Google Maps or they can pull up Apple Maps or whatever it is, but there's no internet. They have no access. They have no connectivity. If they can at least pull up the map, they still need to learn how to read that, right? That has happened to me, speaking from experience. Use interactive notebooks, ebooks, or apps that let students manipulate elements or solve puzzles related to the curriculum. These are always great activities. All right, so let's talk about real world applications. This is the final tip, and it is about making sure that whenever possible, you want to tie your subject matter to real world applications. Listen, we all remember asking our algebra teachers or our geometry teachers or our trig and calculus teachers, when am I ever going to use this? When am I ever going to use this in my life? So whenever we can tie things into real world applications, it's a winner-winner, right? If you're teaching addition and subtraction, introduce it in the context of a grocery store. For the love of all things, please, please teach your students to count money. Now, I know it's probably in our standards and yes, counting money, but actually I know that in the future, money may not even be a thing, right? It may all be digital, and I do think we also need to teach our students the value of money, even when it's not tangible, but using real objects to enact scenarios that kids can relate to. This approach not only enhances understanding, but also it piques curiosity and engages students actively. Now, here are some other examples. Use cooking to teach fractions. Let your students measure out ingredients for recipes. Yes, even your youngest students. For history or social studies, conduct mock elections during an election year to help students understand the voting process. Be careful. Disclaimer, I don't think I really need to say anything else. Just be careful. But it's still something that they can do, right? Use board games like Monopoly to teach concepts of money and investment. And I've even seen some teachers who have taken a Monopoly game and taken it to a whole nother level. And I mean, with the rise of things like Bitcoin, there's all different places you could take this, right? Your kids, your students, even the young ones, they know things. They know things. I'm just saying. Okay, that was a long one, but those are five powerful strategies that can create active engagement just in your daily routines. And remember, again, the ultimate goal is to cultivate a love of learning. And an engaged student is far more likely to develop that than an unengaged student. Now, before we close, I would like to invite you to share your thoughts and experiences with us. I want to know, how do you keep your students engaged? What challenges do you face? I would love it if you would come join us over in our Facebook group, The Classroom Next Door. And we're going to leave a link in the show notes and in the description for you to come join us in that group. This is a group with over 3,000 K-5 educators, and we want to keep this going. We want to keep this conversation going and share ideas so that you can get, because listen, I get it. You're tired. We are all exhausted because it's the nature of being a teacher, and it's October, right? You got parent teacher conferences, you've got report cards, all of the things, but we want to help you, give you ideas and spark some creativity to make doing some of these engaging activities a little easier. So come join us over in the Facebook group. If you've got fabulous ideas you want to share, we want to hear them. So we're going to leave a link to the Facebook group. Come over and join us. Thanks for joining us here for another episode of The Classroom Next Door. If you gained some valuable insights from today's discussion and want to up your teaching game, make sure you explore our full episode library on your go-to podcast platform. Click that subscribe button so that you never miss out on our weekly episodes, and take a moment to skim through the show notes for handy links to all the resources that we talked about today. Your 5-star reviews not only brighten our day here at FHE, they also help other teachers discover the treasure trove of educational tips that we have in our episodes. So if you find value in our show, we would be thrilled if you could rate and review us. We're eager to connect with you as well, so slide into our Instagram DMs and share your thoughts on this episode. Better yet, screenshot this episode and tag both us, Farrah Henley Education, and a fellow educator so that they can benefit from today's topic as well. Your shares are our inspiration. Until next time, continue being the educational rock star you are, and thank you for making us a part of your journey.